Thanks for being with us, everyone. And we have a nice surprise for you today. We have one of our teachers that you all love, who hasn't been with us on the air for a long time, Bill Quinn. Welcome, Bill. Yeah.
Hey, Bill.
Give him a big hand. Come on, you guys. Glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Nice to have you back, Bill.
It's wonderful to be back. So great to be here in the studio.
And the students will say, wow, I'm glad to hear Bill again. And so thanks for coming for this special program, because we're going to tell the students why you're here later.
Okay. Great.
And, of course, you're always welcome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And it's just, I love the students and this program.
And who else do we have with us today?
Hi, everyone. It's Albert. Super excited to be here. This is a copy of our magazine that I'm going to buy 10s and 20s of, because I want to pass it out to all my friends, my cousins, my aunts. Hey, put down those cell phones. Read this article.
Good. And then we have Brendan with us. Hello, Brendan. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
And do you like to be on the studio classroom in advance?
I do.
Good.
It's a great time.
It's good to have you with us, and we hope you'll come often. And our lesson today is on page 10. And, Bill, what are we going to talk about today? Read the title again.
Well, we're going to talk about reclaiming conversation, Doris. And this is actually a speed review. And reclaiming conversation is the title of the latest book by MIT professor Sherry Turkle.
Okay, and it says here that we have to learn to become an efficient user of technology without sacrificing human relationships. Do you think that's possible? We're going to talk about it, right?
I hope so. It's something that it seems like every teenager, even adults, struggle with nowadays.
Mm-hmm. And that's why Bill is here today, because Bill has also written a book on the same subject, haven't you, Bill?
Yeah, it's really interesting. This, first off, I love Sherry Turkle's work, and I've read a couple of her books. I've watched many, many of her speeches, and I really like her work and her research. And I actually, this kind of fits right in with my book that's coming out soon, and Heads Up, Taiwan. And I talk a little bit more about some specific issues regarding culture and society here and this topic.
Well, isn't that a coincidence that you have the same thing? So I'm glad that we can have two book reviews for one.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, the speed reviews that we get are always very interesting. And this one here about reclaiming means that we used to have it, but we don't have it anymore, so we're going to get it back, right?
To recover it.
We're going to recover it.
Yeah.
We're going to reclaim it. That's right. So let's find out more about the subject by reading the left-hand column, the first column on page 10. Are you all ready? And you can read along with us.
Reclaiming conversation. Learn to become an efficient user of technology without sacrificing human relationships. In the early years of cell phones, the younger generation's affinity for texting might have been seen as another generation gap marker. Almost surreptitiously, however, the cell phone has become much more than just the new way of doing things for a new generation. As eloquently documented in psychoanalyst Sherry Turkle's new book, Reclaiming Conversation, the cell phone, and more specifically the smartphone, has dramatically shifted the core element at the heart of human society, human relationships. The havoc wreaked by the cell phone is not generation-specific, because all generations are guilty.
Okay, Doris, we start off by saying, in the early years of cell phones, the younger generation's affinity for texting. Now, I'm going to stop right there and talk about this word.
That's a good word.
Affinity.
Mm-hmm.
And affinity is when you have a strong liking for something. So.
Right. That's true. And you say that their liking for texting might have been seen as what we call another generation gap marker. What are generation gap markers anyway?
I feel like it's anything that differentiates one generation to another generation. Some generations are known for conserving and saving money, and some generations are known for being on their smartphones.
That's true. In fact, they have all these different names for, you know, the millennials and the, what else do they call them? The
Generation Y, Generation X.
Baby boomers.
Baby boomers. Yeah. Yep. We have names for all of them.
Right? It's interesting. Every generation has something they identify with. For instance, maybe even like music. Baby boomers had their rock and roll music, and then you might move forward, and other, you know, I don't know what Generation Y might have had, you know, maybe hip-hop, or then we move into rap. Music is often a generation marker.
That's true. A lot of things show, oh, you like that? Well, you must have been born in that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
We call that a generation gap. What do you mean by the gap?
Well, you know, the gap, actually, generation gap is a term that actually means maybe a difference in thinking and understanding between generations. And for instance, a lot of young people might think, oh, my parents don't understand me. And that's what we might say. That's the generation gap.
Right. Now, I don't know whether Brendan is old enough to know about generation, but he's graduated from university already.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about this generation gap marker? Are there certain things, like, for instance, your sister, she used to work here. Do you have a generation gap with you and your sister or not?
Well, Elizabeth and I think, are a bad example of this because we grew up in a very strong and stable household. So we really had the ideals of our parents, I don't want to say pushed on us, but they were really reinforced, and they were reinforced well. This being said, I have seen a generation gap between even myself and the freshmen coming into the college.
Mm-hmm.
There is just such a huge difference in our thinking and the way of how we view social justice issues and how we view even simple things like what should be taught in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part of the reason why there's such a large difference, even just within that 4 years, is because of how fast technology has improved.
That's
or
true. It's
advanced
changed, right.
And changed, that though our way of thinking and our way of communicating, which is how we transmit ideas, has radically become so different that it's not even the same as it was even 3 years ago.
The changes come so quickly now, don't they?
Right, and actually, what Brendan is just saying there, Doris, is fits right in with that next sentence. And he's seen how these changes have happened almost surreptitiously, and it sneaks up on us, and we don't even realize the change is happening. And now he's saying, wow, he's realizing even a 4 or 5 year difference in age is big now.
Right, that's true. It used to be 10 or 15, maybe,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Surreptitiously is a big word. Let's say it together.
Surreptitiously.
I don't think you'll be using it in your conversation much.
That's an
it's not easy.
Word.
A very advanced word, but it just means it kind of creeps up on you without you noticing it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of things happen. But the cell phone, and not just the regular cell phone, but the smartphone, the cell phone, has become much more than just a new way of doing things. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, that's true, and there is a distinction between cell phone. When I think of the word cell phone, I think of like the old Nokia or, you know,
right.
smaller ones that I used to carry around 10 or 12 years ago.
You just used them to call people on the phone. That's
mostly
it.
Just for phone calling and texting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, of course, now we've got smartphones. And I also think of, I'll put tablets in here, too. I think
yes.
of devices.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So there's this eloquently documented. Now, when you say you documented something, that means that you've just proven it's true. But when it's eloquently documented, what does that mean?
Oh, it means to be put nicely, in a sense. There's two ways of describing elegantly.
More than nicely, even, I think. Don't you think?
It's kind of funny. Eloquent almost sounds like elegant.
Uh-huh.
And actually, Sherry Turkle has a way, not only writing, but when you see her speak, she has this elegant manner about her, and it actually comes through in her
writing. But it's not really elegant here. It means very clearly, right?
Clearly, and she uses some pretty high-level language herself.
Mm-hmm. And the name of the book is Reclaiming a Conversation. Have you read the book, Bill?
I have not read the book. I've read different reviews on Amazon and several other sites.
Okay. So she says that the cell phone, or more specifically, like we just mentioned, the smartphone, which is quite different than the cell phone. There's so many things on the smartphone that you do that have nothing to do with calling people on the phone.
No. And it's funny, we talk about generation gaps. We had an article in Advanced a couple years ago that profiled a family and how the different generations use phones. For instance, the father was using it to manage his business. The mother was using it as a camera. The kids were using it primarily as a texting machine. The daughters were using it for texting, and the son was using it for games and apps.
Right.
So you see a variety of uses there.
That's true, yeah. So that has dramatically shifted what we call the main thing, or the core element, at the very heart of our human society, which is human relationships, right?
That's true, yeah. It's really important, Brendan mentioned it earlier, about how you should have communication so you can transmit ideas with each other.
Right. So how has that shifted that then, Bill?
Well, it has shifted it because now it's the havoc wreaked by a cell phone is not generation specific, because all of the generations are guilty.
Uh-oh, you're guilty. But that means that you we have to do something about it if we're guilty, right?
Yeah, and this, I had a little problem with this word guilty because mm-hmm. it's a negative connotation.
Yeah.
Guilty normally means like in a criminal trial,
right.
You were found that you guilty, you committed a crime. In this case, we mean guilty means, yeah, we've all done stuff like that. We've all had that behavior.
It doesn't mean it's that bad, but it just means that we've all been involved in it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's read the next paragraph. It's longer, and there's a lot to say and some good words in it. And if you want to work on your pronunciation, read aloud with us.
Turkle encapsulates the problem as one of losing both the desire and even the ability of conversation. We avoid face-to-face conversations or even phone conversations in favor of texting or email. Granted, texting or email can, in the right circumstances, be more efficient. And indeed, the efficiency argument is one that underpins much of the enthusiasm for the smartphone. As revealed through the many interviews Turkle conducted in her research for the book, the generation that grew up with cell phones is perplexed as to why anyone would prefer a live conversation that one cannot edit or control. This apparent efficiency, however, is insidious because human relationships, she writes, are rich, messy, and demanding. When we clean them up with technology, we move from conversation to the efficiencies of mere connection. I fear we forget the difference. And we forget that children who grow up in a world of digital devices don't know that there's a difference.
Well, this Sherry Turkle, she does really use some big words, I'd say. They're definitely advanced words. Albert, did you find some big words in this one that she used?
Right. In the beginning of the right-handed column, we have encapsulates. There's two definitions for it. One is to enclose or put something in a capsule. In this context, she's talking about to express the essential features of something succinctly or nicely.
Okay. Do you ever use that word much, Brendan? Encapsulates? Well, I don't use it very much, but you know what it means.
Yes, I do. I often find that I use sort of synonyms because encapsulate, as Albert mentioned, the first definition talks about putting something in a capsule. And when we use that when talking about English or language, usually that means we're just wrapping it up nicely, putting it in a package, metaphorical package, of course, and trying to summarize what we're trying to say.
So she summarizes this by saying that you lose the desire to communicate with other people in a conversation, and pretty soon you lose the ability because you don't use it. So if you don't use it, you lose it, right?
Use it or lose it. That's right, Doris.
So that's what it's talking about here. If you don't practice or you speak to people a lot, pretty soon you find that you really aren't good at it.
Yeah, that's actually true, Doris. And, you know, one of the things I have been doing is I actually train a lot of people on attending international conferences overseas. I've been training a lot of government employees on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, I have to take people to the next level, because if we're going to put them on airplanes, they need to go talk to people. And they can't just go to conferences in Paris or Rio de Janeiro and text the people next to them. They have to speak.
Hmm.
A lot of people are really uncomfortable with that. And,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this. What is the appeal? Texting in email is the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are really uncomfortable actually going and walking up and talking to people. And it's a lot easier just to send a text message.
Some people even do that in offices. Instead of calling them on their phone, an extension line, they just send them a text message.
I know husbands and wives that will be 10 feet away from each other sending text messages to each other at home.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. That's terrible.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it says we do this in favor of texting or email. And I find that more people use texting now than they do email. Emails are not used as much as they used to be.
Interesting point. Everybody thought email was going to die. Email hasn't died.
No.
Its usage has been reduced, but email actually serves a very specific function. It can be used for more highly detailed communications.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Texting has come in and taken the place of email for simpler, quicker communications.
Right.
Texting can be a great tool if it's not overused.
That's true.
I feel like a lot of people prefer texting because it's what we call like asynchronous communication, so it doesn't have to exist at the same time. Let's say Bill's at a conference and I need to reach him, I can send him a message and not wait for him to reply. And when he gets the chance, he can reply.
And then he can see that he doesn't wait to open his email, but you need to send the message right now.
Right. So
and
there are
right.
definitely yeah. advantages to texting. Yeah. But I feel like, you know, later in the paragraph it mentions, I feel like a reason why people like to text now is because they can edit. They don't want to come off sounding like a dummy or, you know, like uninformed. So when they text, they can edit their message versus talking to a person in real time.
Mm-hmm. Additionally, I know that for college students and for my generation, and I would imagine younger, the texting also dehumanizes the person. Now, when I use that word, I don't mean it in the negative sense. I mean that it's easier to be bolder and to say what you think when you're just looking at a screen. It is much harder for me to look you in the eye and tell you something if I think it will make you uncomfortable. And our generation, my generation and younger, are very, very nervous about making others uncomfortable. We don't want to step on other people's toes. So having this ability to text and not look at a person and not have a certain amount of courage required, as you would to speak, you know, it's comforting for us.
The thing about the texting part is, you know, you is sitting right there, and later on, if you just talk to them, you say, well, I didn't say that. I didn't mean that. But if it's textual, it's right here. So it can be... It can work both ways, work against
you. You bring up something, Doris, you and Brendan bring up something that I was thinking about here.
Yeah.
And what I have experienced with texting and, for instance, even I'll say comments on Facebook, anything like that, is that I have noticed it really opens up to misunderstanding because it's incomplete in some ways. People just blurt out thoughts or ideas, but I've really noticed, wow,
they don't have
it in context. They misunderstood what I said.
Yeah, and I totally get what Bill is saying. So nowadays, whenever I have something that I want to convey on a serious note, I would rather, you know, meet the person and talk to them so I can judge their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I avoid texting anything that's, you know, of a serious note. I just avoid it completely. With my parents, you know, I'd rather wait for, like, a video, a face-to-face chat or Skype or FaceTime.
Mm-hmm. And additionally, when you talk to a person, you get a flood of information, not just from their words, but also from their body language, from the tone of their voice, from the circumstances. There's all this other communication aspects that you do not get in a text.
That's
true. As I like to say, sarcasm does not transmit well over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to be sort of ironic or something like that, it can be a lot more difficult.
Right. When you say something, the tone of voice is very important. whether you say, that's good, depends on how you say it sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. And Brendan makes another good point, is that we, I actually feel we're kind of losing that skill of reading people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're just relying on text or even email or the digital communications, and what we're losing is that reading between the lines. What's this person's tone?
What are they reading?
How's their body language?
Mm-hmm.
What's their facial expression?
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually missing all of that, and that actually leads to a lot of misunderstanding.
Right.
I wonder if texting is also conditioning us or training us to be impatient, because, like, if I'm talking to Bill and I'm someone who prefers texting, I feel like, oh, why doesn't he just get to the point? Or I wish, you know, I could do something else and I could just read his message later instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it does. You mentioned impatience, Albert, and kind of tied in with that is people now have an expectation of a response.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be with a phone call, but now people will send messages and then I have to explain later. The person's like, "Hey, I sent you a message at 3:30. Why didn't you reply sooner?" I'm like, "Now
asleep.
I have to explain."
I was asleep, Bill.
Why I didn't reply.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I remember the time when all text messages gained this ability of letting the other person know that they read your message. It's like the worst thing ever. They're like, "Hey, I saw that you read my message."
I know. Well, that's on Facebook now. You can you send a message that says "seen at 1:22."
Oh no!
And I've actually had people give me a hard time. They're like, "Hey, you saw my message, you know, 3 hours ago." And I'm like, now I have to defend why I didn't reply.
I was asleep. Okay. But anyway, they're talking about, you know, the fact that the sufficiency argument is one that underpins much of the enthusiasm. Underpins is a word that we might want to mention what it means.
Yeah, that's one of our vocabulary focus terms. Underpins means to give support, strength, or basic structure to something. That's actually a construction term. You need a foundation,
mm-hmm.
and you need beams to underpin a building. It gives it its strength.
And like, you know, she said here, Sherry says, she says that this generation that grew up with all these cell phones now, they wonder, they're perplexed, they wonder, they say, why would anybody prefer to have a live conversation that you cannot edit or control? So they're so used to it, they say, well, why not? I mean, it's just kind of natural with them, isn't it?
Well, they grew up with it.
Yeah.
It is something that they grew up with, the ability to edit and control what is said and carefully edit it.
Yeah, and, you know, so the word that's mentioned is perplexed, so they're very confused, baffled, puzzled. And I feel like a reason why people want to edit or control what they say so much is because of that upvoting. You know, people can like it. It's like, oh, how many likes did you get? Well, I got 1,000. You know, I feel pretty good about myself. How many did you get? Not as much.
Well, what about this word insidious? It says it's insidious because this apparent efficiency, it says it is insidious. That's a good word.
Yeah, insidious is something that actually, it's negative. It's something bad that happens, but it actually happens without us not being completely aware of it. I'll give you an example. What is insidious? For instance, corruption.
Ooh.
In government agencies is insidious. And it's something that may not be clearly seen by everybody, but it affects people and it has a negative effect.
I have another example that's a little bit closer to home. My grandfather, he used to have high blood pressure, and I feel like that's an insidious condition, you know, something that happens slowly,
mm-hmm.
But has no...
He doesn't realize it. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Okay, so she's telling about this because she said, you know, you don't really realize what's happening to human relationships, but it says that they're rich, messy, and demanding. So we want to clean them up, and we move from conversation to the efficiencies of mere connection. We've connected, we've given our message, and we kind of have it cleaned up so that you can understand what it is. You don't just say it like you think it, right?
I love what she says about messy. I just love that word as far as relationships, because it's in the mess that we learn human interaction, and this is where we learn to interact. Marriages are messy, and if we don't learn how to deal with messy situations, then our relationships are going to fail. It's in the mess that we really learn the skills of communication.
Well, and she says here at the very end of today's lesson, it says that we sometimes forget the difference between these two. We forget that children who grow up in this digital devices world that we're in now, they don't even know there's any difference. That's just the way it is. So when they're kind of used to it, actually, is that good or bad? They're used to it.
We all have, each generation has the reality that they grow up in. This is just their reality that they're growing up in. They've seen their parents use these phones. And so, you know, it's unless somebody teaches them something different, they're not going to know the difference.
I feel like this is something that we can probably overcome. You know, each generation has this thing where it's like, oh, printing press, or too many people are listening to the radio, too many people are listening to watching the television. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the death of communication. But we get over it.
Well, we're going to talk about it more tomorrow. We've got another day on this subject. So the people that grew up with digital devices and those who are using digital devices, let's find out how we can still keep the world of conversation going even though we use them. We're not saying not to use them. That's not the point.
No, it's not the point. Actually, I love my phone. I love the platforms I could use. The thing is, we just need to use them in moderation.
So we're going to talk about that more tomorrow. And will you all be back here as a panelist?
Sure will.
I'm glad to welcome you and welcome the rest of you to listen in. In fact, some of you are listening in on a device right now. You might be doing it on your smartphone. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yep.
But if you're driving, don't try to read the lesson. But otherwise, get the magazine and read along with us. And we'll see you when we get another part of this lesson tomorrow. So have a good day until then. And converse with someone nearby. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.